Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
I'm sure some of you have been following the case of Dublin firefighter Terence Crosby in Dublin, or in Boston, apologies, last week. He was sentenced to at least 7 years in prison for the rape of a 29-year-old woman in a Boston hotel room in March of 2024. He pleaded not guilty. But it emerged nurses, teachers, firefighters, members of religious congregations were among the 80 people who wrote character letters on his behalf. And there was a lot of reaction to this online over the weekend. It raises the broader question, though, about the purpose of character references and whether or not they should be included in trials in courtrooms. Barry Ward is a criminal barrister, Fine Gael TD. Barry is with me here on the line today. Barry, I know you're talking about the general use of character references in court cases, but when are they used?
Well, they're used any time a judge wants to know about a person who's being sentenced. So after a person has been convicted of a crime or pleads guilty to a crime and a serious one, there'll be a sentence hearing and the judge will hear a lot of facts about the person. But one of the jobs of a judge in a sentencing case is to sentence not just for the offence committed, but for the person who committed the offence as well. So in most of those cases, there will be an opportunity for the defence barrister to make what's called a plea in mitigation, which is to set out the circumstances that allow the judge to mitigate the sentence. The prosecution will already have set out the aggravating factors. So, for example, a lot of previous convictions will be an aggravating factor that would make the sentence longer. A mitigating factor reduces the sentence, and it's the job of the defence to set them out. Usually in the course of that plea of mitigation, there would be an opportunity for a barrister, if they're available, to make make available to the court character references, as they're called. But it's important to realise that really they're just there to give the judge background to the person, what their previous life was like before they committed this offence. It doesn't mean the offence isn't serious. It doesn't mean that there isn't a serious sentence involved in the offence as well. But it gives the judge a little bit of context for the person he or she is sentencing.
Why is that important, though? Like, I mean, and I'm not just talking about the case that I mentioned there in Boston, that's why we're chatting about this today. But just in a general sense, and this is an issue, I suppose, that crops up, you know, at least every year here at home in Ireland as well. Why is it important to know that, you know, Andrea Gilligan was highly involved in the local GAA or was a big contributor to Tidy Towns in her community, or ran the local Scouts Club or whatever? Like, why does that matter?
Well, the one of the principles of sentencing is that the court is sentencing not just for the offence, but for the person who committed the offence. So the judge should have some background information about the person. But some of the details about that person would be very important. So, for example, if Andrea Gilligan was up for burglary, let's say, and had 40 previous burglary convictions, that's a huge factor that's going to mean that the sentence is much harsher than it might be if it was her first time. Or if, for example, that Andrea had particular things going on in her life at that time that might mitigate the sentence, that might explain why she behaved in that way, might explain why it was an aberration. But it's also important to remember that judges, if they're dealing with serious offences, and we know the law has changed in relation to sexual offences from the Criminal Law Sexual Offence and Human Trafficking Act in 2023, they can now question those references and cross-examine the person who's given the reference since July of last year. But judges still sentencing for a serious offence is still going to give a serious sentence. But what a character reference might inform a judge about is maybe the possibility that person could reform or rehabilitate. Maybe schemes that might be built into the sentence to encourage that person to do that. Maybe some kind of suspended element that might work. So if you're somebody who has a succession of previous offences, for example, in the same area, suspended sentence is less likely to work for someone like that than it is for somebody with a first offence, for example. So it's just to give the judge context so he or she can tailor the sentence to that person, not just for the offence. And remember, the court will also have heard of all the damage that was done by the offending behaviour. So whether it's burglary or a serious sexual offence, the victim, the complainant, the person who was the subject of the offence, will have an opportunity to set out all the damage that's been done to them physically, psychologically, financially. All of that is set out by the prosecution in what's called the aggravating circumstances.
And it's only though, isn't it? Isn't it? The change to the law was only brought in last year for somebody convicted of sexual offences, isn't it?
That's
anyone
right.
who provides a character reference could be called before the court and be cross-examined by the prosecution or the defence team. Why only for sex offenders, Barry?
I think because what you had was a situation where victims of serious sexual offences were having a situation where maybe members of their community or members of the wider community were coming in saying, so-and-so is actually a great lad and he's been involved in the GAA club or he's been involved in whatever it is locally. And that had the effect of making victims, like legitimate victims who had suffered serious injury, psychological injury, physical injury sometimes, they were feeling isolated. And they were feeling, well, actually, hang on a second, that does not represent the person who committed an offence against me. And they were feeling somehow there was a build-up and there was a fear that judges would take on board all of this stuff and then give a lighter sentence that would not be appropriate. So what we're trying to do with the Act in 2003 was to remedy a situation whereby, because you would have a situation where maybe a character reference is given and the victim in the case or the prosecution might feel that is entirely at odds with the person that we have seen described in this trial or in this book of evidence. And now there's an opportunity for them to put that to the president of the GAA club or the captain of the local sports club or whoever it might be.
Okay. Will you stay with us, Barry, for a few moments? I want to bring in Miriam Henry. Miriam's with me on the line as well. And Miriam, thanks for joining us today. Miriam is a survivor of child sex abuse. Her older brother Gerald was found guilty of habitually sexually abusing Miriam and her sister when they were children. He was a teenager at the time. And Miriam, I know you shared your story with us previously here on Lunchtime Live, but can you just tell listeners what it was like when character references were read out on his behalf during your court case?
So the two character references that were given in relation to my brother, they were actually given by mandated reporters, which is what Terence Crosby also is, and which is what many of the people who gave character references for him are. So mandated reporters would be expected to report instances of sexual abuse, sexual assault. So my brother's wife is a senior staff nurse in University Hospital Kerry. And his father-in-law is an ex-school principal.
Okay.
And they gave character references.
They gave character references. And
it's
what
basically
was
the same as someone standing up and saying, no, he didn't.
So, and can I ask, had you at this point given, had you read out victim impact statements at that stage?
Yeah, so the person is convicted, you read out your victim impact statement, and then the character references are handed in. So there are people who think, oh, well, they gave a character reference, they didn't know he was guilty. This all happens after the person has been convicted. So you give your victim impact statement, and the trial doesn't end on your words, it ends on words about the offender, the person who's just been convicted. People saying how he's great, and he's wonderful, and all of this, that, and the other. Unless you're the person who was assaulted, you cannot and should not be speaking on their character.
And now that we have the change brought into the law, and I don't even mean necessarily, Miriam, in relation to your case, but now that we've had this change that character references for somebody convicted of sexual offences in Ireland will now have to be given under oath, and the fact that they could face cross-examination, is that something that you'd welcome?
Well, I've yet to see any reporting in the media of that actually happening. I follow all of these trials all the time because it is something that's very close to me. Mm. And I have yet to see a single story reported in the news since July of last year where referees were put into the witness box, sworn in, because the law is actually that they are supposed to be sworn in and read out their own character reference and be cross-examined on it by the prosecution and the defence. And I've yet to see a story of that happening.
So I suppose
this is another thing that's being brought in a wishy-washy way, as many other things are being brought in. Like there's stuff coming through the government in relation to counselling notes being used, another wishy-washy way that they're bringing things in that aren't actually going to work for victims.
And yet this is designed, you know, this was the idea in the introduction of this was to try and give victims of sexual offences greater protection during the legal process. But
During the legal process. We have no protection. Victims are not protected during the legal process. The offender is. The offender has a full defence. He has a full legal team. Victims have nobody. You're not entitled to legal representation. You're not entitled to any sort of advocacy in the courtroom. You're just there as a witness. That's what you're described as. Whereas the offender has a full legal team from the minute they are questioned by the guards. And if you consider how long these trials take, it took 6 years for my brother's trial to get to court. So he had 6 years of dealing with a legal team, knowing the ins and outs of everything that's going on. I didn't have that.
Do we have enough protections? Barry Ward's still with us. Barry, look, I know you are a Fine Gael TD, but your previous work, or you previously worked as a criminal barrister. Do we have enough supports for Miriam, and I suppose plenty others out there too?
We can always do more, and I certainly know, because one of the things that I do as a barrister is to appear for complainants in sexual cases. So I'm not sure exactly of Miriam's experience, but there is a provision that allows a person to be represented in a trial who is a complainant, not the offender and not the prosecution, because sometimes it used to be the case that complainants in rape trials, for example, thought the prosecution was there for them, but the prosecution is not there for them. So we brought in law a long time ago which allows a barrister to appear to defend a person in relation to their sexual history if their character is going to be impugned, that there is a barrister there for the complainant, for the victim. And not for either of the other side. So that does happen, and I have appeared in cases in that capacity. But we can always do more, and I know from speaking to victims that they never feel, and it's a horrible thing to have to go through, and nobody should ever have to go through it, because it is an appalling and unfair thing to happen. But the reality is the system has to also be balanced to ensure that there is a fair trial. And so Miriam had said there, for example, that only the victim should be able to give evidence of the character. And I understand why she says that. But if, in the same way that the victim doesn't decide what the sentence is, there must be a dispassionate person who makes the judgment, and that's the judges. And therefore, judges expect to hear both good and bad about the person, and that's what they do. And that's why all judges are experienced lawyers themselves, and their job is to weigh up those two factors and come to a sentence that is just. But if you've been the victim of a sexual offence or a rape,
very difficult. God,
there's nothing that's fair. Yeah. No, you understand that.
No, Nolene Blackwell is with us too, Miriam and Barry, of course. Nolene Blackwell is consultant and online safety coordinator with the Children's Rights Alliance. Nolene, do you think character references should be used in all cases?
I think it has been really interesting, Barry explaining about the sentencing process and Miriam explaining what it is like to be a victim in a sexual offences trial. And in that, one of the two things strike me. First of all, Miriam is 100%, she spoke so eloquently and so correctly about what it is like to be a victim in a sexual offence trial. It's almost unique, Andrea, in that you're not talking about did physical activity take place, some other type of activity or behaviour take. You're asking, was the behaviour consensual? So an awful lot of a sexual offence trial is where the victim of the crime is spending their time justifying themselves and being questioned on whether they behaved consensually with the person who's accused of the offence or not. So while Barry is correct in saying there are two small areas where a victim may have their own legal advice, it is a very, very small part of a trial. And by the time a trial has gone through, a sexual offence trial has gone through, it is the lived experience of victims that they have suffered more trauma from the trial than they have from the original sexual offence, or at least as bad. Now, that's the context in which they're listening to character references. And one of the things that's different about character references to saying, for instance, it's someone's first offence and they should get that should be taken into account, or maybe they had a personal circumstance that made them act in that way. Character references are really mostly about respectability. If someone is asked to produce character, if a person who's been convicted of a crime is to produce character references, they're normally looking for, all the people you spoke about who spoke out in the Crosby trial in the States, their laws are different. But, you know, you're going for the teacher, you're going for the team captain, you're going for the worthy people in a community to come up and say how worthy this person was. So if you're taking into account that they had previous convictions, for instance, that's a fact. But the thing about character references is they are trying to show how respectable, for the most part, the person who's been convicted of the crime is. And that's the problem when you're the victim of a sexual offence, where you've spent your entire time in the court trying to defend and explain to normally a jury, if it's a serious crime, that you did not engage in consensual activity. It is the victim's behaviour is a big part of those cases. So when the character references come up again, it is really another blow to them, another assault on their veracity, on their perception of the behaviour of the defendant. I'm not saying they should be done away with.
No.
I do think, I can see where Miriam is coming from. It hasn't been used much. It's only a year old.
Yeah.
But I do think it makes people think about whether they'll give a character reference.
Oh God, I imagine if you're asked to, you know, to give one for somebody, it's you know, it certainly causes a lot of time to stop and pause and think about whether you'd sit down and actually write a character reference. I want to bring Paula Doyle in for a moment. Paula, you're a survivor of rape. Were character references used in your trial?
Hi, Andrea. Thanks for having me on. No, character references weren't used in my case, but from speaking to other victims, many, many victims and survivors of child sexual abuse and rape, they have been used in a lot of cases.
And are you against their use their introduction in sentencing cases?
Yeah, no, absolutely, because sexual predators are highly manipulative as men, and they control situations, they control their workplace, they control spouses, and are so capable of fooling people into what their character is actually like. And nobody knows what a person is like, either in a private setting or in a setting where there's an attack happening. Like, nobody else was there except the victim. And what I can say now in my case was the rape. You know, and I think it's part of a much wider issue, to be honest with you, and it's again being perpetrator friendly against victim abuse in the judicial system. We're impacted by the violation, the original crime, and then again in the judicial system, and it just has to stop, Andrea. It's just one thing after another.
And I know, sorry to cut across you, Miriam, for a moment. I know when Miriam's apologies mentioned, you know, the change to the law that came in, the Criminal Law Act just last year, and the idea that now references, you know, if somebody does sit down, if I was asked to sit down and write one and I did that for somebody who was being convicted of a sexual offence, that now, you know, that I would know, I would be writing that in the knowledge that I could be called before the judge to give evidence under oath, and that I could potentially face cross-examination. Do you think that might... Like, will it help, I suppose, or will it? Do you think it might deter people from giving character references in the first place?
No, because Women's Day did a survey recently, and 82% of victims actually know their attacker. So they're within the family frame, you know, they're within the community frame. So you know both the victim and the alleged perpetrator, which is now then when the character reference come in, the guilty perpetrator. Like, no one ever asked to get a reference for a victim of what this person, their life was like, what type of woman, child she was before the attack. Like, I was never asked for a character reference of what type of person I used to be before I was attacked that night.
If this listener makes the point here too, if character statements are admissible as a method of leniency in a convicted person's sentencing, a victim impact statement should be considered just as much in the severity of their sentencing. I suppose, Barry, just maybe on a final point to clarify on that, it doesn't mean, the character reference doesn't mean that months or a year is going to be wiped off somebody's sentence. Is Barry still with us?
Character reference is going to rehabilitate somebody who is guilty of rape. And I listened to what Nolene said there. I have huge respect for Nolene. I've known her for a long time. They've done the Brave Crisis Centre in Dublin has done huge work in bringing the law, the change in the law about to ensure that those references can now be cross-examined. And I think it does have an effect on people. They certainly stop to think it's not as easy to give a reference as it used to be. But I would reiterate, and there is an opportunity for the victim to put forward the damage that's been done to them. But there is never anything a court can do. Nobody can be punished for rape enough to actually justify what's happened. It's never going to put things back the way they were for the person who was the victim of that rape. Unfortunately, it is an imperfect system, and it's supposed to weigh up both sides, because not all rape offenders are the same and not all rapes are the same, and judges have to look at them and decide what the appropriate sentence is. But people should be absolutely clear that no character reference is going to wipe years off a sentence, or even, okay, I would say, even a year off a sentence. Look, for context for the judge.
Well, what we're talking about, as I said this today, in relation to some of the commentary about the Crosby case in Boston over the weekend. The email's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We'll leave it there for the moment. Just to Miriam and Paula, thanks so much for joining us and getting in touch with us here in the programme today. Nolene Blackwell there as well from the Children's Rights Alliance, and that's Fine Gael TD and criminal barrister Barry Ward.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.